Welcome to a Monday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, the Heat had their first game of the preseason, losing to the Spurs 104-100. We'll recap who looked good and a surprising performance from Hassan Whiteside.
And then we'll answer some of your mailbag questions from after the game. Also, make sure to contribute to our upcoming written Miami Heat season preview. Visit patreon.com/lockedonheat and click on the link for the questionnaire. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where we break down every news item, rumor, preseason game, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the Heat and the NBA for FanSided. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, credentialed NBA writer, has covered the Heat and League at large for SB Nation and FanSided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
It's Monday, so we'll get to your mailbag questions, but we'll do that a little bit later because we've got a game to talk about, David. Let's talk about what happened Sunday. The Heat dropped their first preseason game, losing 104-100 to the Spurs. Now, wins and losses, not that important in the preseason, especially since Miami was missing Josh Richardson, Deion Waiters, James Johnson, Wayne Ellington, Bam Adebayo, a bunch of guys. But despite the piecemeal roster, David, there were still some noticeable takeaways, most obvious one being Hassan Whiteside's performance. But before we get to that, I just want to point out that despite the loss, missing a bunch of dudes, I'm starting to drink the Kool-Aid when it comes to that company line, continuity and development. Look, this is a very similar team to last year, but this time last season, you were adding a guy like Kelly Olynyk to the roster. You were transitioning from a drive and kick offense, right, from that 30-11 Heat team, to a more side-to-side ball movement, off-ball offense. You were kind of replacing two starters because Rodney Magruder and Luke Babbitt were your starting forwards the year before. You were reintroducing guys like Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow into the mix. And midway through the season, you added Dwayne Wade. Now, this game, Dwayne Wade came off the bench, played 19 minutes, which is probably going to be about what his role is for most of the season. You had Kelly Olynyk, after had all the reps, knew exactly what was going on in the offense. One of the things I was watching for was to see if Spoelstra would tweak the offense again. There were small tweaks between Whiteside and Olynyk specifically, but nothing major, not a wholesale change like I thought from between last year or between two seasons ago and last season. So this whole continuity, this whole development thing, very much there. There was a confidence to this team. Again, despite the loss, I don't care about that. It's preseason, doesn't matter. I'm pretty positive with what I saw from that first preseason game.
They look good. I'll be 100% honest with you. I think that the team looked pretty good. You know, the caveat of the preseason game is important to keep in mind, but they looked crisp on occasion, and they were still without a number of starters. They had Rodney Magruder, Derrick Jones Jr., and Justice Winslow all in the starting lineup alongside Whiteside and Dragic. So that was an odd lineup, but at the same time, there was a pace to the game that was really encouraging for Heat fans. They were playing quick. They were emphasizing pushing the ball after rebounds. Whiteside in particular, who we'll talk about later in the show, looked great on the boards. And he was initiating a lot of the offense in that way because they were, again, pushing that pace, making sure they got out and created opportunities on the offense right after a defensive possession. So that was really encouraging. And the players seemed very comfortable with themselves. I mean, conversely, while you could say that San Antonio was deeper and maybe even has greater overall talent at the top of their roster in DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge, they didn't look as smooth. They turned the ball over a lot, something that's very unusual for a Spurs team. They're integrating all these new pieces. They
11 new players on that roster. That's a lot.
That's a lot. So even though their starting lineup, you know, has Pau Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge, guys that are very, very experienced, they're still looking at figuring out how to incorporate these new players. For Miami, that's not the same adjustment. So it's really, you know, they talk about it, and they talked about it at length at Heat and Media Day. For the Spoelstra mentioned this a lot. We've talked about it before. We thought going into camp that this was going to be a strength of their team, their team's versatility, their depth, and, of course, the fact that they were bringing their roster back. On the outside perspective, you see this team, and you go, well, they haven't made a lot of changes, but that's a positive. And in today's NBA, where it's so difficult, if you don't have a lot of talent, like, you know, a team that's haphazardly assembled, or, you know, like the Warriors that has this much talent, at the very least, you can run it back, feel comfort, you know, a nice comfort level with one another. And you really saw that in tonight's game. So that was very, very encouraging.
There is almost a little bit of market exploitation to that, where, you know, in the NBA, with the recent cap spike in 2016 and just free agency in general, players are moving so much more often than they used to in the league. So it's almost like it is almost like exploiting something that really a lot of teams aren't utilizing, and just, hey, let's just lock these guys up and keep them long term. That's not something that a lot of teams in the NBA could say right now. I mean, you've got a couple of teams right now that are sort of doing what Miami is doing, building on what they have, but very few to the level of Miami. I mean, 14 of the 15 guys on this roster are going to be the same guys if there's not a Jimmy Butler trade in the works. So very much the same group. I think I can't say how important. Wouldn't it have been so weird if Dwayne Wade had signed with Miami over the summer, as opposed to getting traded back here in the middle of last season? That would have thrown a whole different wrench into this entire chemistry. And it's so important. I cannot overstate how important it was for Dwayne Wade to join the team in the middle of last year. Kind of takes the shine and newness off of, hey, Wade back in South Beach, you know, Miami, Wade County, that whole thing. And it's just, all right, he's here. He was here. He's supposed to be here. We all played with him. We play in the playoffs with him in the most important games of the season of last year. So we're just hitting the ground running, and it was very much like that. Now, there were some mistakes, and there is going to take some getting used to when these guys who were injured for this game come back. There's still some lineup things that they got to figure out. There's basically 12 guys on this roster that Spoelstra can find an excuse to play, 12, maybe even 13 guys. He's going to have to figure that out, and for that, I think we might have some continuity concerns as far as just Spo messing with lineups and rotations. But overall, it's the same parts, it's the same inner workings. It just, there's a confidence there again that just makes me more comfortable with what I'm looking at.
Yeah, a guy who played so sparingly last year due to injury, Rodney Magruder, looked really smooth. He was the second leading scorer in the starting lineup with 15 points. Finished 5 of 13, and, you know, finished 1 of 6 from 3-point range. So he was definitely aggressive in looking for a shot, something that we've heard he was looking to explore a lot during training camp. So I think that's great. He got to the line 4 times, which, you know, I think equals his whole total for the last 2 seasons.
His first 2 or 3 shots came off the dribble. And on one of them in particular, he just passed up a semi-open 3-point shot on a kickout, which has been his bread and butter for his entire career. Started putting the ball on the floor and trying to get to the rim a little bit more aggressively. That was definitely an effort by him to do that, right? Like, that looked good. He's expanding his game.
If Magruder were 3 inches taller, he'd be like Andre Roberson on defense, because that's like his biggest problem, is that he's just so vastly undersized. He's built so stockily. And I don't wonder how he can handle, like, he didn't switch on to point guards a lot.
No, he did a decent job against DeRozan, though.
Yeah, that's the one possession in particular in the first quarter that was, like, he forced DeRozan into an uncomfortable turnaround shot that missed everything. And that was really encouraging. That's when that realization hit me, that Magruder, with a few more inches of height, would be such a spectacular defender and a guy that I would get a lot more buzz around the league, but unfortunately, a little undersized.
Quickly, let's talk about Duncan Robinson. 25 minutes off the bench, went 3 of 8 from 3-point range, 12 points in the game. Eric Spoelstra at the end of the game said he passed up maybe 2 or 3 other 3-pointers that he wished he would have taken. He wants Duncan Robinson to be Wayne Ellington. He wants Duncan Robinson to take 10-plus 3-pointers a game. Mentioned the same thing about Kelly Olynyk, who was 0 of 4 from 3-point range, and he said, despite that, I want him averaging 6 3-pointers a game. There is a sense here where Wayne Ellington is really the only guy on a standard contract who is an elite 3-point shooter for his position. But despite that, he just wants these guys to keep shooting threes. Justice Winslow took 3 3-pointers, made 1 of them, but struggled on the night as far as his box score goes. But I still liked what I saw from Winslow, because he was playing in that backup point guard role. He wasn't out there guarding fours. He was out there on the perimeter. He was at that, I think, his best position. That was good to see from Justice Winslow, too, because we've been talking a lot about how he needs to settle into a role. Specifically, the coaching staff needs to settle into playing him at a specific role.
I like that he kept taking his shot, because I think a different version, a younger version of Winslow would have stopped taking these shots. And I'm glad that he felt comfortable doing it, because it never seemed like he was forcing it. It was like in a nice rhythm. The one three-pointer he hit was really, really smooth. It was, I can't remember who fed him the ball, but it was a really nice shot. And he looked comfortable and in rhythm taking it. I thought it was going to be a better offensive night for him after seeing that one shot. Unfortunately, it didn't turn out that way. So that's shaky, but he finished with 8 rebounds. It, just to show that kind of versatility, he was aggressive on the boards, pushing the ball up, looking to make plays for others, really sharp passing, I thought, even though he only finished with 1 assist. It might have been more along the hockey assist type, where it was the pass that led to the pass that led to the score. But at the same time, it did definitely look very comfortable in that ball handling role. So I think that's the role he's going to be playing. I can't imagine. I mean, look, he had to play alongside Dwayne Wade a lot. With Ellington back in the lineup, that wouldn't change anything. Goran started, like, as he always does. So none of the players that were out, with the exception of maybe James Johnson, will probably be ball handling much. So I think this is the role that's probably best for Winslow, as we've talked about for months now, it seems. And I think this is what Spoelstra finally realizes, that this is where he's most effective as a shot creator, playmaker for others.
Mm-hmm. Dion might also affect that a little bit when he comes back.
Good point. Sorry, yeah. It's hard to forget. Hard to remember him, yeah. Considering that he's been out for so long. But yeah.
But there was one play with Winslow in particular that he got an offensive rebound, pushed the ball in transition. Whiteside ran the floor, and was right there for a nice lob that Winslow should have hit him on. Was either not thinking about it, wanted to. Maybe was getting a little too aggressive and just wanted to force his own shot up, or was just so surprised by seeing Whiteside run the floor like that he just wasn't ready and didn't know what to do with the ball. But should have gotten the ball to Whiteside. You got to reward Whiteside when he does things like that. But Whiteside, for his part, did a really nice job tonight. We'll talk about that next, and then get to some of your mailbag questions. But first, Locked On NFL is becoming a favorite daily NFL podcast on Mondays. It's the local experts on the biggest stories from the weekend. On Tuesdays, former NFL and Miami Dolphins quarterback Sage Rosenfels joins host Matt Williamson, who will have some of the brightest voices in football on throughout the week. Available on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on your favorite team. With Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events that you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive $20 off of orders of $200 or more to save even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code LOCKEDON, one word, LOCKEDON, for $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theaters and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app, enter the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Hassan Whiteside impressed in the first game, putting up 20 points, 13 rebounds, 2 steals and a block in 23 minutes. And beyond the stats, was setting hard screens, showing a lot of energy, which leads us to this question from Tuan, who asks, thoughts on Whiteside? Was it the health last year or effort? David, I want to point out also, before we get to this, he lost 13 pounds over the summer. He looked good. I mean, he looked active, agile, athletic. I mean, look, one game, just 23 minutes, but nothing but positive things from everybody that everybody was saying afterwards about Whiteside. This is a good step. This is the right step.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I don't know about those weight numbers, like that kind of. He didn't really look all that different to me physically. Did you see any market difference? Because I feel like some of these numbers obviously get fudged a lot, and you hear. During the summer in particular, guys putting on this much weight and muscle or losing this much weight and fat, I didn't see any kind of noticeable difference.
He did look a little bit slimmer, but maybe I was imagining it because I wanted to see it.
Yeah, sure. I think overall the point is, though, he did look a lot quicker. He looked a lot bouncier, not necessarily as explosive as he was, say, 3-4 years ago, but definitely not the version of himself from last season that was slow, hardly pushed a pace at all, couldn't keep up on offense, wouldn't make a switch on defense, et cetera. We saw a much better version of him. I'm glad you pointed out those screens, because I texted that to you like almost at the beginning of the game, because this was it was so impressive. He was leaning into players. You know, I think a couple of years ago, maybe these would have been called offensive fouls, but, you know, in today's league, that's changed a lot. He set good screens. He was at least making contact, which is 5,000% better than he was doing last year when he was already rolling to the rim when he hadn't even initiated any contact whatsoever. So that was really encouraging. I mentioned in the first segment how his rebounding was just super active, and that was really, really impressive. So as far as Tuan's question is concerned, I'd have to say it's still both. I think the health probably impacted everything, because think about it from this perspective. If you can't bounce the way you're used to, if you can't make that kind of athletic effort the way you're used to, eventually that's going to impact your attitude. You're going to feel a little surly. You're not going to necessarily be as engaged because you simply can't do the same things that you were used to doing once upon a time physically. And I think that from Hassan's perspective, he didn't respond very well. And I think that's well reported from a lot of different sources that he soured on not being able to make an impact. That showed, and Spoelstra punished him, and rightfully so, by taking away his minutes because he wasn't making an impact. So it wasn't about, you know, trying to teach Hassan Whiteside a lesson or anything like that, but about, you know, understanding that he's not being impactful when he's on the floor, so you have to cut into his minutes because you're sacrificing wins in order to placate Whiteside. That's never been the Heat motto at all. So from tonight's effort, I'd have to say that the health was certainly better. He looks significantly bouncier, as I said, and then we saw a much better effort. Like, he was diving to the floor. He blocked a great shot from LaMarcus Aldridge where he extended well above his reach, I thought, and he was able to impact the shot. He was active hands. The whole team, I felt, what were the total steal numbers there? But there were a lot more batted passes than I saw last year.
They were hyper-aggressive defensively in the passing lanes, which was not necessarily the case last year. Their defense, I was a little bit more...
11 steals. 11 steals. That's pretty great. That's a lot.
I think some of that also is just to do with the Spurs being a little sloppy, sure. But there was guys like Derrick Jones Jr. and Briante Weber, specifically those two guys. I don't know how many steals they had without looking at the box score, but they were jumping those passing lanes over and over and over again. I mean, we talked about Spo with his blitz and help scheme and the way that he tries to work with his bigs again in pick and rolls, but it was kind of the perimeter guys who were doing a lot of the blitzing in that game too. And so that it does seem to be maybe, look, one preseason game, you can't take a lot away from one game, but if we're trying to, maybe Spoelstra is maybe preaching a little bit more of this angular kind of jump the passing lanes defense as opposed to just the play it straight up, stay between your man and the basket thing, which might very well be the case, understanding that this team is going to need help scoring. We've been asking them to do this for all of last season, so it would make sense. But I want to go back to really quick to Whiteside's screen setting, because, yeah, you texted me after, I think, the third screen he set, because the first three plays that the Heat ran all started with Hassan Whiteside setting a high screen for either Goran Dragic or Justice Winslow. Right. And, yeah, Whiteside's not a three-point shooter, even though he did make a three-pointer tonight from the corner, which was amazing. And that was, hey, by the way, that was the right three-pointer. You and I had our concerns about, should you let him, do you not let him take the three? That was in rhythm. It was within the flow of the offense.
Right.
I mean, he doesn't need to be taking six threes a game like Olynyk, but that was the right way to do it. Hats off to Whiteside for that. But also,
remember the criticism last year from Spoelstra that, you know, specifically about Whiteside, that he was just kind of camping out along the baseline, not making an impact. It started off that same way, this particular play where he hit the 3-point shot, but it was by design.
He was along the baseline.
Yeah. And then he drifted out towards the 3-point line. And I can't remember who shot the pass to him. Was it Winslow? It might have been Winslow. Either way, finding him in the corner perfectly in rhythm. And he knocked it down. It looked smooth. Looked really, really good. And, of course, the short corner, you want that a lot more than you want the above-the-break three. You know, that's a significantly better shot than the ones we thought he might be willing to take.
And there were a lot of times that Olynyk and Whiteside were on the floor together, which, again, you could point to James Johnson being out as a reason of why that is. But
and Bam also.
And Bam being out. But I do think with having Olynyk, Bam, Whiteside, and James Johnson in that front court, we are going to see those four guys paired together in all sorts of different duos this season. And I do think that we're going to see Olynyk and Whiteside together more than I think we were prepared to see them. Because, first of all, if Whiteside's agility and everything like that is really paying off, you're going to be able to play him next to Olynyk. You might even be able to play him next to Bam a little bit, especially if Bam is trying to, you know, be James Johnson, like super James Johnson on offense. Yeah. That makes a lot more sense that way. But that design that you're talking about, there were several times when Olynyk and Whiteside were on the floor together that Whiteside was camped out on the baseline, but not as but by design, and Olynyk was out by that triple threat position and sort of facilitating the offense, maybe running a pick and roll or a dribble handoff with a guard coming around him, and Whiteside is available there for the dump off. And I was just waiting all game long, because before that play, they had ran that play with Whiteside on the baseline several times, four or five times. I mean, it was one of their staple plays in this game. And I kept waiting. When is Dragic going to come around the corner off the handoff, or Winslow going to come around the corner off a pick and roll and get to the rim and then dump it off to Whiteside, who ducks in from the baseline? And then it turns out he goes out the other way and drains a three from the corner. It was awesome. Great effort by Whiteside. Again, going back to Tuan's question here, health or effort, I think health leads to effort, but I still... Yeah. One big game that was really important. Everybody's super excited to play together in a real basketball game, even if it's preseason. They're excited to get out there. I want to see this effort the entire season, because if we do, I mean, that's always been the thing. It's never been a question of talent. It's been a question of effort, and then on other occurrences, health for Whiteside. So if both of these things are better, then we're going to see a much better Whiteside. That's what we've been waiting for 3 years. Really quick, Lyle writes in, first off, want to say I told you so. You guys are always hating on my boy Whiteside and wanted to, quote, trade his ass. You continuously questioned his work ethic and attitude, yet he put in the work this summer. He's still the team's best center. So what do you guys have to say for yourselves? David, I'll let you take it.
I mean, I don't think there was ever any question that he was the team's best center, but it just never manifested onto the floor. Look, there's still worries about his playmaking ability. He didn't complete a single assist. He was 8 of 10, so he was very efficient, but that might not always be the case. I mean, he was going up against a 39-year-old Paul Gasol more often than not, or who was it? Oh, Jakob Poeltl. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know that either of them present a significant matchup for Whiteside, but at the same time, it was a positive showing. And look, I'll be happy to eat crow. I think there were still concerns, legitimate concerns about his effort last year. If he turns it around, that's great. If, you know, we were concerned that he wasn't willing to put in the work. If he did, that's great. And if it pays off for, you know, in future games, I'm all for it, to be honest with you.
We were never wrong. That's the thing here. If he changes his behavior, then he was wrong. We weren't wrong. He was wrong, and he is correcting his wrongness. And then we will adjust our opinions with his corrections. If he starts going out there and putting in 100% effort every single night and playing sensible basketball and setting great screens and doing the things he needs to do, then I will change my opinion on Hassan Whiteside. But let's not act like this was the Hassan Whiteside we saw last year or the year before that or the year before that. So, again, one game, not ready to completely – you're not allowed to say you told us so yet, Lyle. But if this is the Whiteside we're going to get, then we'll all be happy. We'll continue with our mailbag next. But first, Locked On NBA is here for you every day, not just Tuesdays with us. Every Monday, get the local experts on the biggest stories and then stay with Locked On NBA all week long to get the daily news and analysis on everything going on in the league, available on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. Final mailbag question, David. PJ writes in, things have to happen. I know it's the first preseason game, but we only have one real promising prospect on the team that could develop into a legit all-star, and that's Bam. So in a perfect hypothetical world, we love hypothetical worlds, would you guys rather trade everyone we could, except for Bam, for younger prospects and picks, or trade for Jimmy Butler and know that we could get Kyrie Irving the following year?
Look, I've been a long-term proponent of the third option, which is to keep the team as is, you know, which it looks like if the Butler trade falls through, that might be more realistic. That might be the only recourse left for Miami. I've never been a big fan of the blow-up method, because I just don't know what you're going to get. In PJ's hypothetical, getting younger guys don't necessarily translate into future successes. Some of them might pan out. Some of them might not. You trust that Miami's development staff can help get the most out of any player that enters through the system, but that's not always a guarantee. And so getting younger prospects and picks, who knows? You might wind up being on an equally mediocre and perhaps even worse cycle as far as talent is concerned. I don't know that you necessarily want to go that route, but if you could trade for proven players, hence Jimmy Butler and potentially Kyrie Irving, then I think you 100% have to do that. Yeah. That's the best thing. Look, when it comes to Butler, and it's something that we'll talk about more at some point in the future, should the trade actually be finalized, it's not even about this season's success. I know that there have been some critics already. I think Howard Beck recently wrote that or said on a podcast that Butler's addition wouldn't change or move the needle much for Miami. There's still a second half of the Eastern Conference, the lower half of the Eastern Conference as far as playoff seeding is concerned. And he might be right. They might still be a fifth through eighth seed even with Jimmy Butler, depending on what you have to give up in order to acquire Butler. But it's not necessarily just about Butler. It's about the future with Butler and creating opportunities for other free agents next season and beyond that. You look at next year's free agent class with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Klay Thompson, and others, all of whom have been teammates of Jimmy Butler for USA Basketball. That's the biggest draw there, I think.
And if you knew you could get Kyrie, you'd do it. I mean, you just...
Of course.
But we don't
know. This hypothetical world.
Amazing hypothetical world. And if we're even making a better hypothetical world, you trade for Butler, you trade for Kyrie, you don't necessarily have to move Bam or Josh Richardson, who are the two of the three young guys are the most promising at this point, even though I'm still very much on the Justice Winslow bandwagon. But
yes,
you're able to trade guys like James Johnson or Hassan Whiteside or Deion Waiters or these other more veteran players for draft picks and younger players, right? And prospects and things like that. And then you start building around because, number one, Jimmy Butler and Kyrie Irving are going to be getting paid a lot of money. So it would help to have guys on rookie scale contracts as opposed to James Johnson and Deion Waiters contracts. So if you could do that, that's the best case scenario. That's the ultimate hypothetical universe if we're creating hypothetical universes here. But
to PJ's point here, I've got to ask though, is Bam the best quote unquote young, real promising prospect on this roster?
I think he is. I think he's the best prospect on this roster, and then I would probably go Richardson and then Winslow at this point. Now,
even Richardson at 25?
Yeah. Yeah, there are still too many questions about Winslow. If he can, he needs to make a substantial leap this year. Now, if he doesn't make this leap, now we get to this situation where PJ's writing about where at the end of the year, or by the trade deadline, and if the Heat aren't impressed with what they've seen from Justice Winslow for the first half of the season, do you consider trading him for draft picks? Or for younger prospects whose rookie deals are not set to expire and who you may or may have to decide to extend or not. And so that's a real question that you have to ask. I mean, the Magic were ready to ask themselves the same thing about Aaron Gordon last year. Turns out Aaron Gordon made that leap that they were hoping for, and they ended up extending him or re-signing him, really, as a restricted free agent. But
that's kind of a questionable move, to be honest with you. I'm not a big fan of the Gordon addition.
But it is, like, he did make the leap that they were hoping him, like, he showed signs that they were hoping that he would show. And that's sort of the point here, where Miami needs to see something more from Winslow. They need to see a leap. They need to see him pop a little bit more. Because if they don't, then you do have to consider moving him. That's the only other point I wanted to make here.
I have to agree with you there. I think that's a lot of pressure, too. But at the same time, it looked like he was comfortable. I think he understands the situation. It's in all reality a contract year for Winslow, so he has to be able to make the most of it. But he didn't seem uptight. He seemed, again, within the flow of the offense.
We saw angry anything. Justice. Again,
yes, he aggressive in some
shoved
places,
Deontay Murray out of the way on a layup after Deontay Murray kind of schooled him on the play on two plays before that. So
I couldn't help but like that, to be honest.
100%.
I mean,
yeah, that's what
we want. But it's just so atypical. It's so atypical in today's league, and I wound up feeling like I was back watching Alonzo Mourning in the 90s or something like that. Like, this kind of aggressive level of play, we haven't seen this in a long, long time. No. It's kind of interesting.
Look good. That three-point stroke looks good, too. That thing is real. That's a good – that's legit. I mean, it looks good, so –
yeah,
like
confident.
I said, I'm still on the Winslow bandwagon. I was just trying to point out before. I don't want to end this on a negative note. If he doesn't pop, you got to consider trading him. I do think he's going to pop. I think he's going to have a good season. So,
Was there anybody who had a bad game in your opinion? I know again it's just preseason Dragic with half the starting lineup. Yeah, I know you were pretty down on that. I mean, he finished with 12 points, 4 of 9 shooting, 2 of 3 from 3-point range. So that 3-point shot, you know, we had thought that maybe he would have one of those bounce back years because it dipped a little bit last season from the year before. But he looked good, two of two from the line. So again, not getting to the line very much, but
it wasn't getting to the line, wasn't as impactful a playmaker as Dwayne Wade or Justice Winslow, and then got beat too many times defensively. Kept getting caught on screens. Looked a step slow defensively. I didn't think he had a great game, but then it might have just been an off night for him. We don't want to take too many positives or negatives out of this. It was one game, but we're glad we have it. The Heat will play more preseason games this week, and we'll be here for those things. But for now, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. As always, you can reach us by sending an email to LockedOnHeat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And of course, make sure to hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or whatever you use to listen. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Thanks for listening. One last thing before you go. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return from advertising online or in print, try something new and advertise on a podcast here at Locked On Heat. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. More and more people are listening every day. 50% of U.S. households listen to a podcast, and 1 in 5 Americans between ages 18 and 49 listen to at least one a month. That's according to Nielsen. Thanks to the rise in mobile options from iTunes to Spotify and more, to your smart speaker at home, there's more ways than ever to listen to podcasts. Now is the time to get in. Be ahead of your competition and start advertising on a podcast with us. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so you get what you pay for, with numbers to back it up. Whereas print, TV, and radio ads are a shot in the dark. You have no idea who is reading, watching, or listening. That's not the case with podcasts. If you want to reach engaged, passionate, and knowledgeable South Floridians, this is the way to do it. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company on the next episode.